Someone once told me that no one says life is fair. When you hear that when you're young, you have no idea what it really means. Once you've lived a little, and then you lose everything, suddenly it makes sense. This podcast is a true life memoir of someone who lost everything and is rebuilding in search of who they once were. They're sharing their story as part of their healing process, and so that anyone else out there living through similar circumstance knows that they're not alone. Hey everybody, Dave the Clone here, back with another installment in the Feeling It, Healing It, A Diary of Recovery podcast, journal, saga, weird phenomenon, event, I don't even know, like, you know, I'm sitting here, it's a gloomy Saturday. I feel the equivalent of a hangover, but I haven't drank or anything. I haven't smoked. It's 490 days, I think, or it might be 91. I haven't done my gratitude journal yet today. That's where I keep track of being grateful for every day of sobriety that I've had. And we're two episodes, including this one, away from the 52 count of a full year of every week putting out an episode of this show. Now, I know at some point during the earlier months, I would record several of these a week. I think when I was in my much more emotionally volatile state, it was sort of, there was a lot more flowing out, you know, there was a lot of things surfacing, a lot of pain that needed to be vented and dispelled. And now it's kind of this weird new level of intellectualizing and trying to process without overthinking, although I think that's all I do is overthink what's going on, where I'm at, what has developed. And in some ways, it's an interesting study of, even just for myself, like my own character over the course of a full year, of how different things are and how they're not really fully where they need to be. But I think the mental work is a huge part of getting there. And at the very least, this, you know, part-time gig that I have, that have a lot of hours on the timesheets these last 2 weeks, and it seems like that trend isn't going to stop because we're really gearing up to officially launch this campaign that I've been working on for almost a year now. And we started working on it in June. We're going to be launching it in June. Soft launch in June, full launch in August. And there's still so much work on the docket for both of those sort of target deadlines that it's kind of almost scary. I'm wondering in some ways if, like, I guess I'm just wondering how to keep attacking this, how to figure this out. Like, what bandwidth do I have left to get another job, to fill the supplement, to fill the remaining gap? I was really getting disheartened earlier, both last night and this morning, when I was looking on Facebook Marketplace looking for rooms to rent, and how it's kind of like, it's pretty difficult. And that then reiterated in my mind the need to really figure out much more income so that I can actually try and just go for a regular apartment. Because what sucks, let's rant a little bit and start this off with a rant. If anything, I almost think that this podcast represents, in an odd way, and I think I'm gonna have to change up the theme music, because when I listened to one of the last couple episodes, I'm like, wow, man, the theme, everything's so dark. It's like going into such a dark, you could see where I was when I started this, you know. I even I got some feedback from my friend's wife on the album art for the show, and she was like, like, I was telling her about the podcast, and she sounded like really excited about it, and she wanted to actually guest on it and talk about it because she's gone through some shit too. And then I showed her on Spotify, you know, the album art, and she immediately froze and was just staring at it. And I'm like, oh, that's not a great response. And she just goes, I have feedback. And she's like, I swear to God, it looks like, is this like a doll with their brains being blown out? And I was like, I think you're suffering from looking at it on a small screen, because it's very much a black and white image of, it's actually a composite image of a woman stressed out and looking like she's stressed out on her face. A guy sitting in a sort of on a windowsill, kind of like silhouetted and like staring out the window at the gray sky. And then I think there's a third person in the sort of upper quadrant of the photo. But then on top of that is this image that I found of a broken heart that has been stitched back together and has a bandage on it. And then the title is on top of that. Obviously, if you're listening to this, you've looked at it. And she's like, I don't know. I mean, that's not what I got from it at all. I just looked at it and saw like a doll with its brains being blown out and blood all over the camera lens. And I'm like, well, what does that say about you that you're seeing something that is not actually there? And then I looked at it and I was like, well, I guess if I was squinting and holding the phone far away from my face, I could see seeing that. But it actually, like, she then no longer wanted to be on the podcast. And she goes, I don't know, if you're talking about that this is supposed to be inspirational and it's supposed to be helping people, it's supposed to be helping you, why is it so dark? It looks like it's like you're at your last ditch before you kill yourself here. And I was like, well, not that I feel like there was ever any real danger of me unaliving myself. I hope I don't get, like, kicked off the air for using the old terminology before the world hit its woke midlife crisis or whatever is going on. But I was in a very dark place when I started it. I was in a very dark place, which has, you know, come back here and there throughout the episodes recently. But in the, for the most part, you know, I think in the last 3 months, maybe, for sure, definitely since the holidays. The holidays was tough. And I know that I sort of felt a little bit of a misery loves company when I found out that there are other folks in my circle of friends, people who make their, whose names are on that daily, gratitude journal. There are a handful of you out there. I'm sure some people who even listen to this, maybe, I don't know. I don't know who listens. All 20 of you. For some reason, imagine that, dude, a middle-aged white, straight white guy's, My Life Has Been Rough podcast hasn't gone viral and hasn't really captured the same waves that, like, the Jordan Petersons of the world have. And I think it may be in shying away from hitting into those controversial areas is me still playing small. But I know right now that's something that I have to consider because the job that I have, the company is very into, you know, DEI and inclusion, and it's one of the sort of core tenets. So I do have to kind of, you know, think about the things that I say in general. And I, you know, not to sound like, oh my God, I have to curb all my crazy racist rhetoric. Like, you know, I just think that what we used to just call being polite in the world, what we used to say, you know, think what you want, think anything you want, say half and write down 10%, because that's the safest way to live life without not only offending anybody else, but at least in the layers of thinking about it before you say it and definitely thinking about it before you write it down, you kind of make sure that whatever's going out there is going to communicate things that need to be communicated. But you know what? The whole idea of living in a world with a whole bunch of other people, there's literally no way we're all ever going to agree on everything. We're not a big homogenized gray sky like the clouds I'm looking at up in this dreary Saturday. And there was a time when that was okay. And it seems like what's scaring people like me now, all of us Gen Xers out here, is that there seems to be this movement that that's not okay anymore, and that they want to invade your mind to find out what you're really thinking and then hold it against you when you're like, well, hey, by me not putting it out there in the first place was me coexisting. That's how that works. You know what I mean? Like, It's kind of scary how people don't really seem to realize how close we're getting, especially if you, I don't know if everybody out there is a big Netflix original programming fans or not, but this new Three Body Problem opens with a rally happening in the Red Revolution in China, and you have an intellectual on stage being berated and eventually, you know, executed for not conforming to the more limited, uneducated thinking that has taken strength in numbers to the next level. Scary times, you know, scary times. I remember being in school, probably early years of high school, freshman, sophomore year of high school, when we were learning about things like the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia and how intellectuals were considered the enemy, right? Because we finally had the numbers on the non-intellectual side, and they took fact as offense, and they were the ones who were targeted. It was pretty scary to think about, and it's almost scary that we're sort of seeing that surface. And I don't know why I went off on this rant, because it's not necessarily about me per se. But I was wondering, because of how disheartened I was earlier, looking at the people who have, like, rooms for rent listed on Facebook Marketplace, and thinking to myself, like, man, this is where I'm at. Like, where I'm at currently, I can only safely go for something like this. I don't have enough income to be able to afford. And it's, like, not only being able to afford, but then sometimes with not only apartments, there are even some of these people on these Facebook Marketplace posts that want to see, I want to see proof that you make three times the monthly salary in your monthly income. And you're like, well, if I could afford that, if I could afford three times what you're asking, I'd buy something. Like, what kind of fucking sick logic is this? Where did this shit start? It's really fucking, it's... trying to think of how to say, a big part of the problem, it's almost like this podcast is the ultimate year-long freestyle album that just doesn't follow any rhyme schemes, because a lot of this is just kind of like letting loose from the top of the dome. The only episode I really scripted was the first episode, and that was because I was in such mental upheaval, mental breakdown, that if I didn't organize my thoughts on paper, it would have just been me, like, blubbering and crying and not even being intelligible. And at the same time, too, looking back at that time, you could see how much of it was still focused on, like, the trauma of the relationship that sort of set this phase of my life into motion. The struggle with looking at the sort of reality of the situation, but also dealing with the emotional turmoil, which has not completely abated. I mean, there are definitely still times where I'm feeling things that I think probably most of my support structure is a little concerned that I'm still feeling. I know, actually, one of my sisters flat out told me, you should not even be thinking about her anymore. And it's a little scary that you do. It's, like, unhealthy. And I say, yeah, I get that. And I'm sure if maybe the job thing had been less of an ordeal and wasn't still ongoing, if there was some area of stability, it might have been easier to fully get over everything. And it's funny to think of how much I complained or how much issue I had with the situation, the living situation I was in. If, in all reality, if that jerk off homeowners, and that's what they are, I'm going to full on throw some shit their way, because they are definitely people who did absolute negative activity to maintain the integrity of that house. They did not want to fix things. They did not want to make sure that the tenants that were paying them to live there were provided for in any way according to the contract. And they were also using that address to send their kids to the school system that the town where that house was, and they lived somewhere else. And that was a fraudulent, illegal activity that they made us sort of complicit in. Although I guess, I don't know, if they were renting the house out, it's not really our responsibility to do that. But we knew that they were doing that. So I don't know. I've still, and I've been told, I don't know if it's true or not, I've been told that I can still report them for that, whether their kids are in that school system anymore or not. And that thought does go through my head every day, but I'm really trying to get away from putting energy into, like, revenge plots. You know what I mean? I'm much more concerned with putting my energy in my self-improvement plot as opposed to going out of my way. You know, I've really been in all the sort of me work and mental work and emotional work and self-discovery work and improvement work. Everything points to forgiveness, which I've spoken about on this show before, about forgiveness being far less about being nice to the people who hurt you and more letting yourself just get over it. Because if you don't forgive so that you can stop actively thinking about it, it's kind of like perpetuating the pain. It's keeping the wound open. It's picking the scab so it doesn't heal. And revenge is the ultimate version of non-forgiving, right? You know, now revenge is great for movies. Kill Bill. And sometimes you see stuff, you know, kill Ari. She should go for revenge. You had nothing left, you know, like they left you for dead. You thought the baby was dead. You find out in the second one, the baby's still alive, but they still took the baby from you. Yeah, go kill them all, you know, because they're all doing fine now. But, you know, if you're not in that position, if you're not somebody who's been an assassin their whole life and has no sort of profile on paper, you know, nothing, no bandwidth to rebuild in. Yeah, revenge is great for a big fictitious story. But what am I going to do? Spend the rest of my life trying to get my ex-narcissist to finally admit that she treated me badly, you know, that she wrongfully hurt me and threw my life into upheaval? I'm trying to maintain the mentality that all of this was necessary for whatever the next level my life is going to get to. And that's the part where I'm also trying to learn faith. I mean, I've been discovering faith on the spiritual side of my journey, but also the faith that there is an end game to this phase of my life, you know, and this all keeps tying back to the disheartened feeling I got from looking at these rooms that were available, because it's all, you know, a lot of the sort of hopefulness, the manifestation stuff, the affirmations and the faith, that is all kind of like letting yourself. And it's funny because they talk about this in The Secret, in the documentary movie of The Secret. One of the speakers, I forget who it was. I know it was a woman, but I don't know if she was a psychologist or a doctor or a spiritual leader, or she might have been a business guru. There's like all kinds of people that get interviewed in that movie. But she said, you know, one of the biggest things with this idea of like the positive thinking and attracting the life that you want to yourself is that you have to sort of get your mind into the mindset of already having it, because there is a version of you down the line in the future where they have all these things already. So in the sort of metaphysics of the world, where if all time is happening at the same time, that means that you technically already do have all the things that you want, and that you have to start living that into life now. You have to start feeling that into life now. You have to start bringing it forward so that the point you're at now and the point where you have all the things get closer and closer to meeting. And this one speaker said, you know, one of the hardest parts about this is that you're telling yourself, like, yes, I've got all the money I need. Yes, I've got the new car. Yes, I've got the dream job. And then you wake up and you're in the shitty apartment. You're driving the car that's falling apart and you don't have the job. And your brain goes, but you don't have all those things. And so it's almost like you have to fight your own mind. And it feels like you're lying to yourself. It feels like you're playing pretend. And the other big thing about The Secret is that it's also about the energy that you're putting out and how positive thoughts have a positive response and negative thoughts have a negative response. And that's why by living into feeling these things, you're outputting the positive, which is going to start bringing the positive back to you. It's really counterintuitive. It's really weird. It's weird that we're designed to not naturally operate in that way, and that it takes this kind of, you know, hippy-dippy documentary and book and all these books to kind of get you to re-examine what's going on in your mind during your conscious moments and your subconscious. You're also trying to program your subconscious because your subconscious is more powerful than your conscious mind. Your subconscious is actually what's driving you most of the time. And if you can get your subconscious, because the other thing that's crazy, and this is, I also feel like this has been playing against me in some ways too. It's the disheartening. I'm going to keep putting a pin in that so I don't get too far off tangentially, but there's also something to do with dreams, the sort of really vivid and intense dreams I've been having that I can't really remember details of, but I wake up feeling off, feeling like something weird just went down. And you start to understand what they say. The subconscious mind cannot tell the difference between reality and dreams, or reality and non-reality. So if you're telling the subconscious mind you already have the money, you already have the new car, you already have the job, it will begin operating as if those things are true and start making things. It'll be putting out not only the energy and the sort of thought waves into the world, into the universe, but it will drive you more in the direction of acquiring those things, making those things become true. That's partly why you do these affirmations and why you say them like before you falling asleep. They say, you know, you have to get these messages into your theta state where you're not fully conscious, but you're not fully asleep yet. And the mind is still receiving. And then the subconscious mind takes in the programming and starts, you know, acting on it. So something's been going on in my dreams lately, where there's this feeling of urgency, definitely some adventurous type stuff, but it feels also pretty tied to, it's pretty grounded. Like, I don't remember, like, I'm not flying around, I don't have heat vision like Superman, but I am doing things like making money, making business decisions, helping other people. It's hard to describe because I can't really, like, when I first wake up, like, if I wake up to have to, you know, go take a leak or something and it's 4 a.m, I fully remember for the first, like, 30 seconds I'm awake what was going on in the dream. But then when I go even just to get back in bed and lay down and try to get back to sleep, you know how, like, you try to get back to sleep real quick to get back into the dream you just left? Like, it's a Nightmare on Elm Street movie. It never happens. And I'm definitely been waking up feeling more of, like, a disturbed feeling than not. And so that's kind of combating all of this work I'm doing, all of these books I'm reading, and the inspiration I'm taking from these books. And then couple that with, you know, you're telling yourself everything's going great. And to a degree it is, you know, the getting a paycheck twice a month and getting some, and knowing that that's there, steady income. On top of that, having the access to healthcare, which I really have to find a therapist ASAP to sort of be helping with completing this work. I'm also almost done with that audiobook now. And even the author emailed me because I had put up a couple of the revised chapters I did. And he said, hey, I listened to the first couple chapters. I have a few more notes, and this is the last round of revisions I'll send because I don't want to drag this on forever. I just want this to be as good as it could possibly be. And I had to reach a point where one of the parts of their feedback was about the, I've been using an AI platform to do the female voices. And for the most part, it works really well. But when it gets to parts of the book where they have to have, like, really intense emotions, and I've done the recording of my voice, really lots of intonation, like, you can hear that they're upset or they're yelling, and you run it through the voice generator and it just comes back flat, no emotion. And, like, there's an entire chapter I still have to redo because his note back was, this is unacceptable. And I'm actually going to have to, like, bite the bullet and say, hey, listen, I think everything else I can do, all the other revisions you're asking for, I can do. But when it comes to these two chapters where it's this woman having to be really upset and beside herself and stuff, no matter what I do, the AI is spitting back garbage. I think you're going to have to find a female voice just to do her chapters, you know, just to do her voice in the different chapters. I'll do the edit. So, you know, and once I kind of came to that conclusion, I felt a lot better because I feel like I was putting all this pressure on myself to figure out how to use the tools I'm using to get results that I know the tools are not allowing for me to get. And once I kind of told myself, well, that's not possible, so why are you trying to make it possible? Why not just be honest with this guy as a producer? And the only thing I can think is if he's going to try to pull money back, and I'll say, no, I still did all this work, but what you're asking for and what we're looking to do to accomplish here is not possible. You know, he definitely didn't want it to be a guy just making his voice sound high when he does the women's parts, because it just sounds like a guy doing women's parts. So I presented this option with the AI, and the first couple tests I did, everything was great. But when it got to the more intense stuff, even yelling, like there's a part where this girl is supposed to be calling for the main character, like Robert. And like, I put it into the AI generator doing that, the recording of me doing that. And it just came back, Robert. And I'm like, oh geez, you know, no, I don't know. Maybe there's more settings I could try, but I've done everything I could find, short of just reach out to the people behind the AI platform and say, hey, what the fuck, what's up with this? So that's gonna be my last ditch before I suggest to this guy, hey, you're gonna need to hire a female to do just this one character in the 3 or 4 chapters she appears. In any case, feeling like that's almost done takes some of this sort of weird stress and disheartened feeling, because I also want to, you know, audition for additional books. I keep having to remind myself that that is still an option, that that could be another source of income. It's not as regular or steady, but if I get a couple more, that'll be little boosts. But, you know, trying to tell yourself you already have all these things, and then you go and you look at something like Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist, where it's like sort of, you know, it's still not the level you want to be at, but at least I can get myself out of my parents' house so that I'm not burdening them anymore. And you'll read the description and it's like, oh wow, nice big room, own bathroom, only like $800 a month, and it includes the utilities. Okay, cool. And then it'll say no access to kitchen or female renter only. And you're like, fuck. And then you find something else that's in that same price range, and it's like a closet, and you're allowed to use the kitchen, but you're not allowed to have guests, and you know what I mean? Like, it's like all kinds of weird restrictions. I still am shocked at how much the kitchen is a thing. There are so many of them that say no access to kitchen, or we'll give you a mini fridge and a microwave. And it's like, well, listen, I mean, I know I'm in sort of the situation I'm in, but that is a recipe for malnutrition. And I don't understand how you could be open to renting a room in the house to somebody, but not letting them use the fucking kitchen. Like, and it really, to me, it creates this feeling of like, what the fuck happened to us as a society? Why are people like this? Why is everybody so, like, inhumane? Why is there no sense of camaraderie? And it's like, I keep going back to, for all the shortcomings that my former roommates had, for all the things that I, that were like a disagreement of lifestyle, of the way we lived, at least I didn't have to worry about shit like that. Like, I could keep stuff in the fridge, I could use a portion of the freezer, I could cook when I wanted to cook, when the kitchen was available, and no one had any issues. Like, it's weird to think how much I was so... And I mean, there are still some things, like there are things I still haven't shared because I feel like it would be rude and out of turn for me to expose them. But, you know, certain elements of keeping the place clean, you know, like walking over, like if there was like a piece of paper on the floor, the one roommate, he would walk over it a million times. It'd be there for a month and it wouldn't get thrown away until either I or the other third roommate would pick it up. And to me, it's like shit like that. And that's just a microcosm, you know. Now, like, extrapolate from that, like how that would extend to the bathroom or the kitchen, you know what I mean? Like, okay, you know, but that in the grand scheme of things is turning out to be such a sort of small complaint when you look at these other people who are like, all right, it's $900 a month. plus your share of utilities, and no, you can't use the kitchen. And it's like, fuck you. Like, why would anybody do this? Why would anybody do this? Or it's like, great price, everything is cool, but the place is already fully furnished, and I'm trying to find an unfurnished place because I still have these storage units with all my furniture and gear and stuff that I don't even have here at my parents' house. And some of it I don't even miss, but some of it I do. Like, I still have, like, some... There's a certain portion of my Blu-ray collection that is still up in that storage unit that every once in a while I'm like, oh, I know I have this on Blu-ray, and I don't have it with me, and I can't watch it, and I struggle now with the streaming services because Prime fucking added ads, those bastards. I guess I am paying for the level of Netflix that doesn't do that, which is great, but my parents aren't, and they'll have something on, and all of a sudden a commercial will come on, and I'm like, man, this really sucks. And this is another one of those areas where the Gen Xers versus the Gen Zers were like, you idiots have no idea, like, what it was like. I would go back to cable in a second. I would go back to, like, 1995 in a second compared to where we are now, which I knew we would get to. As soon as Netflix appeared and as soon as people started streaming, I'm like, oh, this is going to be bad. This is not going to just stay just one service that does this. Now all of a sudden every fucking channel is doing this, and oh my God, how did we get here? It's really funny to be able to realize you're old enough that you can look back and see generational differences, and you start and identify with the way your grandparents used to be like, you kids these days. Constantly shocked. And it all combines, you know? So you look at the whole thing with looking at the rooms and being like, man, it really is like a needle in a haystack to find that one perfect option. There are a couple that I want to reach out to. But the really good ones always will have that caveat. Oh, we're looking for a female. Like, okay. But you've had the listing up for 3 months. You know, these things usually go. I'm a little annoyed. There was one that I think I looked at even before the holidays that looked like it would be great, but they were looking for a female. It was a male and female couple that had two other rooms for rent. One of them was already rented, and they had a room open, and it looked like size-wise it was good, price-wise it was good, and I'd be able to bring my furniture. And they were only looking for a female, so I messaged them, like, would you consider a male? And they're like, we're not sure, we're debating that. And then, like, a week later, they're like, yeah, you know, we decided we'd be open to a male, so do you want to come see it? And I didn't go look at it, and now it's gone. You know, so this is kind of where I'm at. And so it almost feels like when I have those moments where that hits you like a 2x4 of like, oh, it's like I made progress, but I still haven't fully made progress. I'm still trying to find out, like, what my full tax obligation is going to be, and that's kind of, it's sort of like living in this limbo of unknown that's creating this heaviness that is so hard to get out from underneath. That you know, a buddy of mine said, hey, you know, you got to make sure you're taking time for yourself where you're not thinking about stuff like this, where you're able to, like, relax and recharge. And I'm like, nope, I don't really, I never feel like sitting down to record this is about as much as I feel like I'm allowed to justify of time where I'm not trying to figure out how to get out of this, where, you know, I do have a couple hours, like at least 2 hours of work to do for the part-time job today, then I'm going to be recording the book again. And then, you know, reading more on that course on how to do the digital products, and then, you know, trying to create some. You know, I have access to so much AI stuff that I didn't realize I had access to. Starting to learn that. And it's like, then, you know, when I'm in the moment working on those things, then a lot of this starts to dissipate, at least for a couple hours. You know, I start to relax. But then, and usually, again, by the time I'm going to sleep, I'm at least tired enough that, like, that makes me relax. And I'll put something on and fall asleep watching it. But It's this different version of the anxiety bully. Now, I have started reading this one book called The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, which has been probably the most effective of all the books I've been reading lately in at least having an immediate effect on my mentality, because going back to the sort of revenge thing, the idea of our perception of time being pretty much an illusion that we don't realize is an illusion, and it affects so much about, you know, the decisions we make and how we behave. But if you could take a step back from that and realize all that's ever really true, all that ever really exists, is the moment you're existing in right now. The moment I'm sitting here saying this, the moment you are sitting there listening to this, even though they are separated by actual timestamps of occurrence, it's still the only thing that exists, because the past has already happened. And then I've probably talked about stuff like this before, but it's somehow the way that this book is talking about it, it is a new way of looking at it. Past has already happened, so it's occurred. It will not occur again. There's literally zero benefit from focusing on it as if it's still happening. And then what's still has yet to happen is only a projection that your mind has put together of possibilities. So it's not, this obviously is counter to that last thing I was saying about how the future already exists and all time is happening in the same moment. But I think that kind of the two concepts are a little intertwined there, because the future is a time that has not occurred yet, so you don't know what it's really going to be, and therefore by having the anxiety or worry about it, you are forcing yourself to experience an artificial version of it. And then once, it's the same way where, you know, an easier sort of idea of this is like, you know, if you have social anxiety and someone invites you to a party and all this, like, you know, when they first invite you, you're like, oh, that sounds great, I'm going to go. And then like the day of, you're sitting around going, I really don't want to go. Even as you're getting dressed to go, you're like, I really don't want to go. And you're in the car driving there, you're like, this is going to be terrible. And your mind is going through all these things that are going to happen that are going to suck. And then you get there and all of a sudden it's like, wow, this is different than I thought it was going to be. I'm actually having fun. I'm meeting new people. We're having a great time. That's the big difference. Like that moment, the only thing that was real is the now of when you were there and experiencing it. But this whole idea of what it was going to be beforehand was a false version that your mind was projecting. So the book really focuses on being present in each moment. And then it also talks about the idea of that we identify ourselves as our minds. We think that the things that we're thinking and the things that our minds are doing is who we are, when we're actually this other sort of being behind that. We're these sort of consciousness extensions of the universe that are here to experience the world. And so when you're feeling these anxieties and these things going on, you can take a step back and remove yourself from it and realize that just because you're feeling that, it doesn't define who you are. And once you start moving into that space, you can take the power away from things like the depression and the anxiety. And actually, this past week, on the mornings when I'd wake up and the first thing I feel is this anxiety going on, I start to do the grounding things that they talk about in this book, like the think, listen to your breathing, realize what the feeling of the pillow against your face feels like, look at the light in the room, take in everything that's actually going on that's tangible and real in the moment, and you wind up stepping back from all these kind of like thoughts that your mind is producing, the, oh my God, did you do this? Oh my God, did you take care of that? Oh my God, this is going to come through soon. Oh my God, did your paycheck show up? Oh my God, how much work do you still have to do on that book? When are you ever going to finish that? You need to get that off your plate. Oh my God, did you put in your odometer on the app for your car so that your insurance gets the full discount you're supposed to get? All these things that make it so that you almost just want to hit snooze again and just stay in bed. And I recently saw one of these, you know, five truths that people don't realize, you know, posts on Instagram. And it was like, people who sleep all day are unhappy. You know, It was like, I can't remember what all the other four were after that, but that one really struck me because it's like, yeah, you know, like, why do you want to stay in bed? Because you're not happy and you don't want to face the day filled with all these things that are keeping you or reminding you how unhappy you are. So it's easier to just kind of, you know, turn the alarm off and close your eyes, pull the covers over your head and go back to sleep. And I guess getting up early and going on the walks every day has been one of the ways I've been countering that. But since I started working, I haven't been getting up early and going with the group walking, but I've been going on walks by myself a little bit later, because working with the wellness coach, it's like you have to get 7 hours of sleep. Make sure you get 7 hours of sleep every day. So, you know, and I think in the ideal world, that means getting done with everything you need to by a certain time so that you can go to bed by a certain time so that you could still get up early and still have gotten those 7 hours of sleep. But now that I'm trying to restructure my days, I've been finding myself working until a certain time and then trying to do additional work, like working on the book and using AI to design things and trying to, I've actually written a couple pages of a new script that is kind of a revisiting of that audio drama I've been thinking about for the last 7 years. And the next thing I know, it's like midnight and I'm like, oh geez, you know, if I don't go to sleep right this minute, I won't get the 7 hours and I'd have to get up to walk. So I've been sort of sleeping in. It's been about 2 weeks since I've walked with everybody. I need to do that again. There was a certain thing though, where I was starting to kind of feel like, you know, I think the feeling out of place, the feeling like I don't belong, is becoming alarmingly clear to me. Not that I don't like being here with my parents, but I don't see anybody, I don't interact with anybody, and I am starting to worry a little bit that, like, the social side of me is kind of atrophying. And in that respect, I agree. Like, my mom keeps mentioning, like, I think you should just get a couple nights a week working at a restaurant just because you would meet other people. Who knows what that could lead to, whether it could be opportunities or even just, like, or, you know, you might meet a girl, you know, who knows. But just to get out there so that it's not just you by yourself. And it's like I kind of agree with that. Mostly because of all these feelings of sort of like, it's tough. It's tough doing all this alone, even though I still feel like it's not really fair. It wouldn't be fair of me to get into a relationship with somebody, which is, again, I think fueled. I have to really take a break from social media. I think I'm seeing far too many videos that show me how different the world is now, in more ways than even I realize, just from my own experience. Like, how, I guess no one would come out and say this, but there is a huge bias, right? Like, if let's say I met somebody and they were like, oh, so what do you do? And I say, oh, you know, I'm a freelance video producer and I'm working part-time for this one company. And they're like, you know, when I would tell people that, they'd be like, oh, wow, you must make a ton of money. And I'm like, oh, I'm actually in the financially worst shape of my entire life at 44. And I have no idea if I'm ever going to be able to afford a house. And of course, it doesn't help that, you know, the World Economic Forum is telling us we'll own nothing and be happy very soon. The window on figuring this out before the world actually completely starts to openly, overtly, in front of everybody's undeniably visible spectrum of light is rapidly closing. That's not something that's super attractive. I'm also not happy with where I am physically either. So I feel like, and this is probably all just my own insecurity playing itself out, but I feel like I don't bring anything to the table that would make someone say, yeah, come home with me, or I want to go home with you. And if I'm renting a room in a house that doesn't allow guests, they can't come home with me, you know, like things like that. That it's like at 44 having to live life small, like I'm some teenager, even though I'd be paying to live in that person's house. That's like, that's the part that I can't understand. I remember when I was first in the dating scene after I had called off my engagement, and I was going to meetups a lot, and I was also doing a lot of swiping on the Tinder. There was somebody I went on a couple dates with, and she was renting a room in someone's house, and she wasn't allowed to have guests overnight. And I was like, that is fucking insane. That is some audacity that somebody would actually be, that they're charging you money to live in a room in their house, but then instituting rules like you cannot have guests. It's like, and I mean, I guess there are two sides to this argument, but as the person who's trying to look at life from the perspective of like, if I'm an adult and I'm at least earning enough money to be able to pay you to live there, are you out of your fucking mind? Like, what that, like, how do you justify that perspective of no guests? Like, I don't know. To me, it just seems to me like if you take the step, if you are going to be somebody who's renting out a room in your house and you're expecting adults to live there, it's almost like this crazy lunatic that I lived with for 2 months in New Jersey in the mansion. It was all adults living there. You know what I mean? In fact, the room that I had was the sort of, I guess, the biggest room that was available in the house. It had its own bathroom. It happens to be directly over the garage, and in the, you know, insane sweltering heat of summer seems to be like the place where all the heat would, you know, become concentrated. So I don't know how people ever did this, but she told me that at one point there was a couple renting the room. Like, it was like a guy and his wife renting the room, or a guy and his girlfriend renting the room together. And one of the other roommates, whose room was on a, you know, bordered theirs on the same wall, complained to the landlord that I could hear them having sex. And that's the only thing I can imagine with this whole no guests policy. But it's like, I don't know. It feels like such a weird overstep into controlling somebody's life. And I think that's really what it comes down to. There's been a lot of, in my mind, kind of like snapshotting the situation, realizing the control that the debt has over me, and control that, like how much that hampers you, you know, your financial freedom. And I've never before felt it, like, even though I know when I was in the corporate world and it was grinding, I would always be able to justify, like, yeah, but, you know, being able to sit around on the weekends and smoke pot and with my girlfriend at the time when I was living with her, and then when she wasn't there, when it was just me in my place, and I could smoke pot, play video games, watch cable, watch Blu-rays, go to meetups, go to bars, hang with this group of people, it justified the going through the Monday through Friday, you know, torturous routine. It never struck me as much as sort of feeling like you're in servitude. Maybe like on the days where I'd be taking the bus, you know, into and out of the city. And especially like at the end of the day, when you're on this long line of people waiting for the bus, and sometimes there's so many people that, you know, that even once the next bus gets there, there's so many people ahead of you, you're not getting on this bus, you're going to be getting on the bus after that. And you start looking at the schedule going, I'm not getting home till 8:30. Jesus Christ, what is this? And that's when you start to, you know, and you would actually look around, and you're like, this looks like I'm in a line of cattle just waiting to go into the slaughterhouse. Like, you know, those are the moments that you sort of felt it. But now this is where it's really starting to kind of have almost this sort of like post-apocalyptic, like slavery, like the humans hiding from the Terminators kind of vibe to the way I see it. And granted, you know, I'm living in a nice house that my parents own in Delaware in a very nice community. One of the things I also put on my gratitude journal every day is living in a peaceful geography, the time I get to spend with my family. So to kind of feel this way feels mean or hypocritical, but it's just the fact that I feel like I don't have the juice to be able to make the changes like that. Like, I have to be so careful for I don't know how much longer. And that's what it comes down to too, is like, you know, like I was looking at these rooms last night, looking at them this morning, So I had to like try to do something monotonous to get my mind off it. So I'm changing the sheets on the bed and I'm folding laundry. And all I could think is like, how much longer can I go feeling this at the mercy of feeling, you know? It's kind of like last time, where I was like, it's like I can only keep hearing it's darkest before the dawn for so long before you're like, the night is not ending, you know? And I mean, every year it's going to always be like, yeah, you know, I made all this progress and then the government came in and ripped me off, you know? You don't really realize how much that's all stacked against the people on the lower end until you're one of those people on the lower end where you're like, shit, you know? And then you see these videos where there's people talking about, like, you don't even realize it, that they're not actually even using our taxes to fund the government. There have been leaked documents that really taxes constantly are just taking money from one group of people and handing it to another. And, you know, how many more of these things can get leaked before we actually do wind up in a civil war or something? Because I don't know, I get pissed off every time I hear them and I start thinking, you know, it's like everything is so broken. And some of us are just in that, like, this is how it's always been. So we're just not going to do anything about it. And then the new people are so much more worse off than those of us who've been around for a while that they're like, what can we do about it? And they want to do something about it, but they don't want to actually do the work. You know, like, I don't know anybody. I definitely don't trust the Gen Zs to stand strong if there were some kind of a civil war. I don't even really want there to be a civil war. Like, that movie just came out called Civil War. I'm like afraid to go see it. You know, I do not want to be living. This is not the life I expected as a teenager and as someone in my 20s, that this is the life I would be seeing this aspect of life in my lifetime. I was like, nah, we're good. Everything's on a good course. Even into the early 2000s, it's like, yeah, you know, everything's fine. It's not fine, but it's doable. And now it's like, no, the system's like literally almost at the end where groceries are becoming crazy expensive. You know, if you haven't figured out how to become a millionaire by now, you're probably not going to. And if you're not a millionaire, you're going to get caught up in the storm. And that's a tough spot to be in. You know, and I can't, how do you put that in the priorities of things you need to manage in order to get your mind right, to be able to get your life back in order. You know, it's almost like, and then, you know, when those thoughts come up, it does come back to like, I can't fucking believe this happened. How did this all happen? Because I thought I fell in love with the person I was supposed to be with for the rest of my life. And yeah, it's tough. It's tough to not get caught up into the back towards revenge. But I don't know. I guess I also have to keep acknowledging without beating myself up that, like, yeah, but you made the choices, dude. You know? And so now you have to make the choice to get out of this. You have to make the choice to do what it takes. And maybe that does mean getting a job a couple nights a week at a restaurant. Maybe that does mean getting a job at a grocery store. Maybe that does mean something. Which, you know, getting back to the power of now, when you sit there and realize what's real, like, what are your fears of any of those things except for your mind projecting, you know, a false reality? Like, what could be so bad? It's not like you haven't worked in restaurants before. It's not like you haven't done, you know, jobs before that weren't what you spent the last 20 years honing your expertise in, you know? It's that part of me that goes, well, if you're really serious about not wanting to be like this anymore, why aren't you actually doing everything that you need to do? And I think for me, it's like, well, I've been told so many times that I'm talented at what I do. There have been people who have been like, dude, yeah, with your voice, you should be cleaning up as a voiceover artist. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm trying to do these audiobooks, and I signed up for a voice work marketplace, and I haven't auditioned for anything, but I should start. And if those options are something that I could do, and they are options that would pay a lot more for a lot less work, which should suggest that I could do more of those jobs in the same time that it would have been earning $20 or less an hour at a retail store or a grocery store. Or, you know, I do know that the people who work in the restaurants, at least around here, make really decent money. So that should be the end of that debate. But I don't know. I'd like to use the things that I have and make more, because I feel like I have a lot to recapture, a lot to rebuild, a lot of loss that I have to rebound from. So I don't know. I think that's the part where I'm still playing small, because I'm letting these little fears or little anxieties or little apprehensions keep me feeling stuck. But I don't know. I think once I finish this book and get a chunk of money for that and get a couple more auditions out, maybe I'll put out a few more auditions before I actually work on the book today, so that I feel like I'm, you know, moving forward on that front. Yeah. A lot of it, too, is like having a network of people that can help you, because we are living in a time where it's definitely the businesses market. It's not a seeker's market. There's so many of us looking for jobs that it's easy, you know, it's very easy to get turned down for any reason. I was just talking to a friend of mine yesterday about how I'm like, yeah, you know, I went on this job interview. They loved me. Like, everything seemed great, but because I had other clients and had a part-time job, they used that as their criteria to be like, oh, well, he wouldn't be able to prioritize us. And I'm like, first of all, isn't it my side of the equation to manage my time and make sure I hit deadlines? You're not even going to give me the opportunity to prove that I can, you know? And it just felt like one of those things where I'm like, the person you went with better have been cheaper than me. And that's really what it comes down to. And my other colleague telling me that, you know, instead of hiring people like you, Dave, who they have to give benefits to and everything, they're going to Upwork, they're going to Fiverr, they're doing all the things that your old job told you it would be more expensive to do. Maybe at that time, maybe, you know, 10 years ago, it would have been more expensive to just farm things out, because you're going to be paying a higher premium and it's better to just pay somebody a salary and a benefits package and have them at your disposal all the time. But I guess people see it differently now. Oh, enough griping and ranting. Maybe for the next episode of the Freestyle Show, I'll actually freestyle or something, but that'll be our big one-year anniversary show. And I'm going to start just attuning my mind to that there will be good news to report for that one. And I'm going to use the power of positive thinking to bring it forward, and we'll see what happens. But yeah, it's definitely interesting how this show has evolved and morphed. Maybe it'll be time to change the artwork a little bit and add some different music to the opening, change the dialogue up a little bit there. But it feels good to be able to say it's been a year. It feels good to have these sort of markers to show what the year was like and how things are sort of moving in a direction. Better direction, I don't know. Different direction for sure. And as long as the ride doesn't end, you know, that's one of the biggest things, the best, biggest messages I got, especially this guy, Simon Bedros, who's the success coach. He said, you know, the small wins that everybody forgets to celebrate are the fact that you do get yourself out of bed and that you do keep moving forward, no matter how scary this all is, no matter how hard it all is. You don't just give up. You don't end the show. You don't stay in bed all day and wait for them to come and evict you and throw you out on the street. You're like actually trying. And that's like a huge part of keeping that momentum going forward. So find a way to let the sort of reward of having that going for you be part of the fuel that motivates you to continue going. So I think at this point, that's partly where this show is, as far as that being a beacon of light in the darkness for folks out there. And to know that we're not alone, that all of us are struggling in our own way, on our own unique paths. And as long as we keep working, as long as we keep moving forward, we'll get to California, right? As long as you keep walking, it doesn't matter how long it takes, you'll get there. And I have to get over this feeling of, I need to, that my age is a reason I can't do anything anymore, that I wouldn't be able to still achieve a level of success. It's remarkable to me how much of this is a mental game of telling yourself to just keep moving and not give up, and having to hear these thoughts and stop them and say, no, that's not true. You know, of all the things, you don't expect your mind to be one of the forces aligned against you. But, you know, when there is trauma, when there is damage that has come into play, you know, it does make sense that your mind would be a little confused and need to be realigned. It's weird because, like, you know, they always say, the sick person can't diagnose themselves. You can't self-diagnose, but you have to recognize when your mind is falling into your old patterns if you're consciously trying to change them. So yeah, I guess we'll leave it there. The power of now. Realizing what's real in the moment. And in the moment, I gotta go record this book. And then I'll feel better. So until next time.
You've been listening to a production of the Hollow Nine Network. Feeling It, Healing It, A Diary of Recovery, featuring Dave Maresca. Thank you for listening to Feeling It, Healing It, A Diary of Recovery. Dave Maresca is not a trained medical professional, psychologist, psychiatrist, or licensed professional trained in providing therapeutic mental health care. This podcast is an account of his life experiences and meant to be just that. Any advice or suggestions made in the extemporaneous dialogue of the podcast is not intended to be medical or legal advice. If such advice is what you're seeking, you are encouraged to seek out the services of a licensed professional. The Hollow Nine Network and Dave Maresca assume no liability or responsibility for the information provided in these episodes.